how many shares will you give up when you have a baby? And I was like, what? Like, how dare you? My co-founder had basically just had his first kid. You have sometimes these moments when somebody says something like this, and you know, it's like, it's obvious you should have a really good movie response, and you're just kind of shocked, shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments for me, to be honest. And that's maybe a moment I regret. I have like a lot of responses made up in my head in the meantime, but yeah.
This is Female Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established female business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us.
Hi, we are here at the Sunny Scene Ventures Studio. It's a beautiful day, and after the third intent, we finally made it. So we are here. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Katja.
Great to have you here. We bumped into each other at the Merantix AI campus, where you are the boss, or one of the bosses. And you are an active angel investor, and you're very active everywhere. Please tell us about yourself. What are you doing? What have you been up to? And I look forward to getting to know you better.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much, Katja, also for the invitation. My name is Nicole Büttner. I'm originally an economist by trade, and now I'm the founder and CEO of Merantix Momentum, which is an AI service provider. We build scalable solutions for all sorts of companies across Europe. And I'm also a managing partner and investment committee member at Merantix, which is an AI-first venture studio where we build companies that rely on data and AI-driven business models and sort of seed. Pre-idea founders, I would say,
okay,
and finance them up until Series A.
Yeah. So do you provide ideas to the founders, or do the founders come with ideas already to you?
I would say it's a mix. I would say everybody obviously has their own story and they come with their own background. So if somebody starts off in biochemistry, it would be unusual that they end up somewhere in legal compliance. So usually people have ideas and they have a background, some expertise, and then we ideate together and validate business models. I mean, as you know, like just because you have an idea in some area, to find the exact business model and how you want to have an operating model, etc., and how you exactly build a tech stack is still debatably, even in the first 1 or 2 years, still subject to change.
Yeah,
when you're building a company. So yeah, we're there to accompany founders on that path.
And there has to be a product market fit as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it like comparable to Antler or Entrepreneurs First, or is it a very different model?
I would say it's, we know Antler and we know Entrepreneurs First. I think they're great organizations. I would say it's a little bit different because we have less volume.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a more intense and less, I would say, structured process, in the sense that we look what each founder sort of needs, and we have a bit more time. I mean, we just have less volume, and we also have a higher amount of capital that we deploy. So
yeah, and I think it's a longer time frame as well.
It's a longer time frame. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, Antler and Entrepreneurs First, it's like a two, three month process, and with us, it's more like six months, 9 months, and then
okay. Exciting for sounds like a very good pipeline sourcing, maybe potentially for angel investment deals. For how long have you been doing that, and did you get one of your angel investments out of the Merantix venture builders?
So actually, I have not gotten one of my investments out of the Merantix pipeline, to be very honest.
Not yet.
It's probably only a matter of time. That's true. I started angel investing. I was actually trying to think which year this was. I want to say it was 2018. A Swiss company focusing on software for childcare centers. Mm-hmm. So to give parents more flexibility and a whole user interface and everything. And that was, that was pretty cool. I liked it a lot. I didn't have kids back then, but in Switzerland, at least it's a very big market.
You understood the problem.
Yes, I understood the problem. I knew the founder and I wanted to get involved. So it was not a huge ticket, but it was meaningful to me and my first investment.
But you started, so it's a software for kindergartens
for childcare centers. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Kindergartens. Yeah.
Okay. Like B2B and, or for parents, more like parents.
Yeah. So the buyers would be, so it's B2B2C, I guess, because the buyers are, the buyers are parents, but then you have the parents who are the actual users.
Okay. How did it work?
It worked pretty well in the end. It's still a functioning business, so it still exists. I would say it's not a unicorn now, so that didn't work out. But it's they have quite wide adoption across Switzerland, and them,
it's a good company.
It's a good solid company, but it didn't fund my pension yet.
Yeah, but so first ticket was not like a failure. It was solid
business. I already got my capital back, and I still have a stake. So all good.
Perfect. And do you support them as an advisor or did you support them in the very beginning?
So this coincided a little bit with my journey into AI, right? Today, I'm working very much at the border of trying to get AI really into adoption and implementation and do this through my investment role and also through the role with the software provider. And then I was just sort of... I just moved out of a job in a niche in machine learning and tech and sort of auction theory, very, very niche-y, and was just starting my own first company in Zurich. And I was not quite in a position yet to give that much advice on the tech side, or at least I wasn't daring enough, let's put it that way. So I had more ideas and concepts around business models and how to approach maybe the market and so on, that we were sparring on. I think I didn't see it back then as giving advice, but more having conversations around the topic. And I thought it was fascinating and I wanted to learn more and I wanted to obviously give input. And I was also asked to do that, which was great.
That's really cool. So, and you're an economist by training, right? Mm. So you started in St. Gallen. Are you from Switzerland originally?
I'm actually from Germany.
Okay.
So I'm half German, half Jamaican. I spent a lot of time in Switzerland and studied in St. Gallen and Stockholm and Stanford. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I got a lot of cool cities in.
What was your favorite?
I think that's tough, honestly. I think everything was good for me at that time, right? I was pretty young when I went to college. So St. Gallen is kind of a small, university college town. So that was good. And then obviously Stockholm is beautiful and bigger, cosmopolitan than, Palo Alto was just, a lot was happening there.
Yeah, so there was an MBA?
No, I was there at the econ department doing research.
Okay, wow.
That was cool. And everything, all these three cities are great and dear to my heart.
So no regrets, you would do it again.
Yes.
Yeah. And so then you worked as a hedge fund portfolio manager in Paris as well. You worked with a Nobel Prize winner.
Wow. It's a not very linear biography, I would say.
But that's great.
I tried to get into development economics actually initially, and I got my first job offer, and then I realized I don't have it in me to move to Africa. And I then started looking where I could apply my skill set, moved to that hedge fund.
Okay. That's very
in Paris,
different.
which was very, very different, but I desperately didn't want to move back home. So I looked for a job, and that was great. And then, as I said, I did some research in Stanford, and one of my professors there has a tech company, and I worked there for 3 years. Yeah, exactly.
Before we started to record this podcast, we were talking about our young kids. So, did you have a dream as a kid? Whom did you want to be when you grow up? Did you want to be like an astronaut or?
I don't have one of those answers. I always thought it was admirable because I had a very close friend in school and she always knew she was going to be a doctor and a surgeon. And she's a super successful doctor and surgeon. I was like, wow, she really knew early on. I had no idea what I wanted to become. I mean, I thought I started sewing when I was 10. I wanted to become a designer. And then I asked my mom to have a sewing machine. And then like 2 years later, I wanted to become an architect. So I never had this fixed point.
Yeah.
in the end, I studied economics, so ended up.
That's a generic thing. And your parents allowed you to like follow your curiosities and just experiment.
That's
really great. That's super cool. So yeah, now you are like very active entrepreneur, investor, board member. You are also lecturing at the university, right? You're like back to the roots. How do you juggle all this, and what do you enjoy the most? What's driving you?
I think two things. The lecturing, for example, I mean, two things that tie it together. I would say one is curiosity. I'm just always curious to learn more things, and I always thought after university, it's hard to just focus on one thing, right? And always wanted to learn more. And that's also what I find fascinating about tech. And the second thing is also like paying it forward and giving back. I think it sounds silly when I say it like this, but I would say I'm a very loyal person, and I want to give back to communities that have nourished me, and I'm super grateful and feel very privileged that I've been part of so many rich ecosystems and communities, and I try to paid forward to the next people who are there, and just kind of like sponges soaking up everything that people do. So, for example, St. Gallen, I lecture sometimes. I'll be like a personality in residence there, so you can kind of go back and curate a program there and interact with students. And I'm just super happy to do that, and curious also what comes out of this interaction.
Yeah. What's the most surprising thing you take like from interacting with this like growing with the next generation, with the younger generation?
How reflected people are. I'm just so impressed. Honestly, I have the feeling, I mean, you heard my biography, it sounds a bit random. I'm very happy how it went. I don't have any regrets, but I have to say when I was 17, 18, I didn't have that level of reflection when I was choosing my studies, and I was a bit more naive, I think, and I'm just really consistently impressed with people also joining my team or investments or students I interact with, how mature they are also thinking about their actions and how they impact the world, etc. So, wow.
Yeah, the future of our planet and society and how to minimize the negative impact living behind. I agree.
I'm so impressed by that.
I also think most of the times you learn more from younger people than... from like people your age or like older ones. So I think it's incredible. So paying it forward, like going back to angel investment. So the first one happened, it was a friend of yours. You were starting your own entrepreneurial journey. He was starting his. So you angeled in and you were like a bit of aspiring partners, like giving and receiving and learning from each other. So what happened next? Because you have a few angel investments, so you're an active angel investor, combining it with all other things. You are doing. What are other investments? How did you pick them? How did they happen? What's your investment focus?
I try to now that I have a more, I would say, established expertise or something in the AI and tech sector. I basically also in all my other activities try to understand how can we use technology to do something good in the world, something with a purpose. So I'm usually often asked and approached in scenarios where technology plays a role. So those are often investments where I can add a lot of value, and that's kind of also part of my approach. I like to also be a little bit involved and be able to give something beyond the capital. And that's where people often see value. And then, I'm also driven a lot by, giving it back to and paying it forward to women. And so often I also invest in diverse teams, but not exclusively, to be very honest. So I also have, this first one was, for example, a male founder.
You have to start somewhere. And I mean, if it's a great idea and great founder, you cannot do like positive discrimination, right?
Exactly. I think it's really cool because also a lot of founders are like, I want some female experts and female capital on my cap table. So and I like that. Very determined. Also, again,
male founders, they realized, okay, like even if we are like a male only team and the product is not necessarily like something for women, they explicitly would love to have some female angels on the cap table and investors. And that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, also to shine some light on the many European female business angels that are out there. So people would know and listen to their voices and see, okay, like there are female business angels. And
exactly. And you can find them all here on this podcast, for sure.
Not all of them.
But just, soon all of them.
That's not the goal, but just like the small selection. And also to realize like how different the expertise areas are and like what they can contribute, and just to know where to search, maybe, because there are like different venture builders, organizations, like, I don't know, like scouting programs. And there is Alma Angels, for example, in the UK, Evangelistas in Germany, there are Angels for Women in Italy. So in France, it's Sister. So it's like in every single country, there is kind of a, like a union for female business angels or for active like women executives who want to give back and support other women. So I think it's exciting. What kind of ideas do you like? Do you like to support? And
so, for example, my last angel investment is in Ecomio, and that's basically a founding team that's trying to encourage employees to do more environmentally friendly business travel. Okay. Right, so it's in the climate tech space. It's using sort of technology to build something like the Miles and More, but not for air travel, but for ecologically friendly travel. And I think that's a really great example of having really clever, smart founders thinking about how can we create positive impact, how can we leverage technology, and having a lot of drive and passion for the topic. And that's typically, you know, that's where I'm lucky to be able to give some value to talk about, you know, things like, oh, how do we build a tech team? I mean, it's very practical stuff, right? When you start out, sometimes that can just save you a lot of time. How do we build a tech team? How would our hiring focus look like? You know, what profiles did you find more useful, senior or juniors, and even the different tech profiles, et cetera? How would you go about that? I remember how I asked myself those questions, so I can understand, you know, when you have like at least three or four people who are informed about this and you can say, hey, my 3 cents, that just saves you a bunch of time. And it's great also to use that knowledge to benefit somebody else. Sometimes you made these experiences very painfully. And
and then it's a shortcut, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can obtain. Yeah, that sounds like good. So sounds very good. So you are... Basically, you have a venture builder. Are you involved there, like operationally? Do you have to babysit all the teams that are cooking AI ideas? And then you are also involved with your angel investments.
So I'm involved, I would say, in the Merantix Venture Studio. I'm involved in the selection of entrepreneurs. Okay. And then in the process of sparring and finding the idea. And then also in the investment committee when we actually give capital. And my team... and me, we're also involved in sort of especially technical feasibility. So sparring on a technical level, often they're quite complex business models as well. And just kind of understanding how can we, from a technology side, tackle this and what do we really need to build, to build a sustainable USP, et cetera. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's great. I think it could be also interesting to use AI for deal sourcing, right?
It's already been done.
Equity Ventures, for example.
But also others. Yeah, there are. I mean, this is something that's obviously. That seems quite like an obvious use case to try to understand what's going on in the world, trends, etc., and latest funding rounds, and so on. So yes, you can build these sourcing tools.
What do you think? What's the most exciting use case for AI, like right now in the future, and what's the most scariest one, maybe?
Oh wow! Okay, this year we're all in the real world very scared about things that have been long not so present on the European continent, war. And I think when you think about the application of AI in that domain, it can be really comforting and reassuring, right? And it can be really scary at the same time. And that's, I would say, exactly this double-edged sword that we're working with. And it depends on who's deploying it. So I think, you know, in like thinking about offense use cases in the military space, that could be scary quite fast. I think I'm really excited about use cases in, for example, the healthcare sector, pharmaceutical sector, because we want to improve the standard of care so dramatically. And the resources, as we know, are limited, right? Our healthcare systems also funding-wise have limits. That's just the real world. And with AI, we can sort of speed up like the development of drugs. We can create higher levels of personalization of drugs. And I think that's really exciting, right? When you think about people with really rare diseases or even the functioning of drugs in the human body, yeah. right? I mean, eventually we could maybe come to the point where we really develop a drug just for you, right? Yeah. That works best for your body and your conditions. And I think that's just really promising.
Yeah, actually, so my neighbor is he's a cancer researcher and like well-known one and like a professor and a doctor, and we were talking about that, and he told me that the breakthrough will not come through the invention of like one single cure, but through the analysis of data with machine learning and personalization, like with the help of AI. So it's about like determining, like defining like what type of cancer a person has and what is the suitable drug for that, which can be like totally personalized. So I think it's fascinating. I hope we will still experience that.
But you know, it's also interesting in every other domain where you with limited resources want to create a more personalized and scalable impact. So you can, you know, think about education. I think that's a really interesting use case. Not that I think, you know, children should only learn from machines. Mm. There's also scientific evidence that they learn really well from humans. But, you know, you could think about personalizing and scaling and also the environment, you know, when you think about limited resources and how we want to get the most out of them.
I also think it's very fascinating. So this sounds so your spectrum of interest is very, very broad, like in terms of like professional and personal interests. So are your angel investments, right? You also backed a cosmetics company, I think you told me. Mm-hmm. Like it's like personalized skincare. So I bet like attached, so travel, childcare. So it's a very broad spectrum.
Yeah.
So do you have a specific investment focus, or are you looking for certain traits in entrepreneurs and in the founding teams that are like winning combination?
I think that the technology angle is kind of the obvious common denominator, where I think that I've now crystallized for myself you also need to understand the company and the business model, right? I don't feel comfortable with things where I'm completely swimming and I don't understand it, because I want to have a real commitment. And I think that's why that makes a lot of sense for me to focus on that. And I think that's also what then the founding teams find valuable. I think that's what you need to find, or everybody as an angel, or like that's been my experience at least, that I kind of wanted to find that intersection of what I find interesting but what's also useful for others.
Yeah.
that I'm happy with. And then obviously I feel very passionate. I mean, especially in the tech sector, diversity is key, because the counter side of building scalable solutions is that a small group of people build software and a product that a large amount of people use. And we're all biased as human beings, and that's something we can't avoid. And ingraining that in a system, in a software system, and deploying it to potentially millions or billions of users, that's where you wanna be careful. And that's why I think diversity in the tech sector is especially important, as it is in all other sectors, by the way. But that's why it's dear to my heart.
So that's the box you try to tick, like when searching for your investments. Do you search proactively for them, or are they approach you, or do you work with VCs? So what's the
I think it's setup? It's a bit of a mix. But to be honest, I don't have that much time at the moment to source actively. I would like to much more. So I try to kind of observe what's going on, but then I'm lucky. Sometimes I'm being approached, and right. I mean, I speak to you. I speak to other friends, and right.
You're on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I listen to the podcast, right?
So,
and then you kind of get to log out
of your LinkedIn afterwards.
Exactly. And then you know there are people writing to you on LinkedIn and saying, "Hey, you have this idea. Can you have a look?" And that's really great, because then I can interact.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so you've started to angel invest in 2008, so it's been like a trajectory of 4 years. Have you seen any trends or changes in their like ideas that people are pitching, or maybe there are more diverse founding teams now than 4 years ago?
Mm.
Is there something you contemplate, you observe that?
I think
there are more like projects.
I think the diversity is higher, and okay, I think there's cool. There are two trends at least that I see. I would say much more climate tech, and a lot more female-focused founders, a lot more femtech as well, which I would say, I mean, maybe I was looking in the wrong places as well, but I did not see that 4 years ago, yeah. to be honest, or I wasn't as aware of it. And I think that's great. Because, yeah, not only can products be biased, but also there are some products that will never be built because people don't understand one of the largest user groups in the world, women.
Yeah, yeah, like half of the planet. So women building for women, that's comforting. That's something we would love to hear at this podcast. Yeah, that's actually good. No, so our thesis is also here that if there are like more angel investors or just like women giving back, like paying it forward, so there will be more other women daring to build something for women or in general something like they realized, okay, this is what we want to have, and let's just build it and do it. So this is why we started this. This format.
And for me, it was also an experience. I when I started my first company in Zurich, actually, it was cash flow positive. Yeah, it was an expert platform. I had no clear path, you know, to think, hey, I was going to raise capital. But I started this company. I had fun doing it. I thought, okay, how can I grow the company? So the next discussion was about how to raise capital. And one of the investors actually asked me, so how many shares will you give up when you have a baby? And I was like, what? Like, how dare you? My co-founder had basically just had his first kid, and he was not
asked this question.
And he was basically falling asleep, like with his eyes open, understandably so, you know. But nobody asked him that question, and I was completely shocked. And honestly, although I already quite had been in the professional life quite some time, I was still sort of speechless. Right? I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Needless to say, I didn't take capital from that investor. I ended up actually not taking any capital. But I still felt this is just
thinking over it.
Insane that I'm being asked this.
What did you respond?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was speechless. I was a little bit mad, right? Because like you have sometimes these moments when you when somebody says something like this, and you know, it's like it's obvious you should have a really good movie response, and you're just kind of shell shocked.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments for me, to be honest. And that's maybe a moment I regret. I have like a lot of responses made up in my head in the meantime. But
I would probably answer like, wow, I would put my baby on the cap table with my shirts. And I'm like the legal custodian until like he or she turns 18. Why? I mean, if something happens to me, my kid will inherit my shares anyway. Exactly. But I don't know, probably at this moment. Yeah, I don't know.
I was unprepared for this.
Yeah, wow.
I was unprepared. Yeah.
The only moment I had, I was an operator, an executive, and I got a promotion. So I went to negotiate this like million deal to a business partner. I walked into the room and we were a very small team, like, well, dynamic. The Spotify was growing. It's crazy. So I walked in and he said, okay, where is your boss? I was like, well, I'm a boss now. I'm in charge of like this region and this part of the business, and we're going to negotiate the deal for this year. And I want to talk to your boss. So, and then another thing that happened to me was like, oh, how old are you? I was like 28. I was like, I'm 28. Oh, that's cute. That's like my daughter's age. I was like, okay.
Would you want somebody to tell that to your daughter, right?
I don't know. I was just like, okay, interesting. Yeah, interesting. Should I take it personally? Would he tell it to me if I was a guy? I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you have these questions. But I mean, I also don't want to, I think the narrative and also when I'm at universities, I think the narrative should just be, you know, it's not as difficult as, you know, people maybe suggest to you. It is difficult enough, right? Yeah. Any entrepreneurial journey is difficult. But, you know, women are just as educated, sometimes much better, and just as smart and just as business savvy. And you know, there's no reason. Actually, there's, I believe, even evidence that female fund companies are even economically performing better. So, you know, all the reasons to connect to angel investors, to networks, and kind of just understand how, get the courage, get the support, and understand how you can be part of that.
There are the statistics, so it's true. And I think it's up to also to the policymakers to, well, we have to have kids and we need new generations, and also men, like as your ex-co-founder, fall asleep when they are young dads because everyone is sleep deprived with the baby. And I think like our social politics has to work around that, and it's just a stage in life, and we all, like women and men, need more support, and we cannot maybe work for 90 hours per week.
when we just had a newborn, but it doesn't mean we have to give away shares or just do nothing for a year or so. It also doesn't mean you have to go back to work like 1 week after having a baby. Maybe you can take some weeks or months depending on your preferences and your state of like health. But yeah, I totally agree. And you've mentioned at the beginning that you are really like positively surprised by the new generations. Do you feel there like this debate and this attitude towards like gender differences? Is it changing or is it not like the topic for them yet because they are like in their 20s? And
that's an interesting question. I mean, maybe I can reflect on my own journey. I think me in my 20s, at least when I was still at university, I was not aware of this issue. To be very honest, I thought this is all solved.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm at university. I'm kicking ass. I don't know. Yeah. I'm at this, you know, I'm going to the nice schools and I'm getting grades. You know,
I'm playing with boys. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, you know. So I thought that this is solved. And then I started working and I realized, oh, it's not solved.
Okay.
I started working in France. I thought it was very hierarchical, etc. And I...
I would think France is more like égalité.
Yeah, égalité in my ass. No. Okay. So there were a lot of slides, obviously, in the company presentation, what percentage of the workforce were women. But when you look then at the investment professionals, I mean, I was the only female on our investment team. And then you've realized culturally that there were... I mean, there were many practices where I would say that's... They would be maybe potentially in legal trouble today. But, you know, back in 2008 when I started working, it was kind of still accepted. Or still common day practice, at least. And for me, it was really important to then connect to women. I think I've radicalized ever since, I would say, from the, oh, I think it's a solve to, no, we need quotas and we need to fix this because it's not fixing itself.
So having like co-founded and run your own company and now also being in charge of Marantix business. What do you do to make sure, like, do you have quotas in place or is it just by having like a kind of gender diverse executive team that you also make sure the like women and men are being treated equally? So
We have about 30% women in our company, which I would say we definitely want to improve at Marantix Momentum. We find it also very hard, but, you know, we're trying to encourage. So if you're in the tech sector and the AI sector, you know, hit me up. It's also trying to show... You can be a parent, being in the company, for women and for men, right? Because what do we do if we just build stuff like... make it possible for women to be parents. That's also right. On the other side of every man, there is a woman also in the company. So by making it parent-friendly also for the men, we also try to make it parent-friendly for their partners who might not be in our organization, but still that's important. We do a lot of events on this. We have a lot of, I would say, for the bias perspective, we have ethics discussions and mechanisms within the company in place to ensure that we don't... fall victim to our own blind spots, etc. But I would say we're not done as a company, even though, you know, we're a female-led company. I don't think it's work that's ever done, right? Because then you think about male-female, but, you know, there are all these other diversity aspects that I think as an organization you just have to be mindful of.
Diversity of backgrounds, thinking, like...
Exactly. Maybe we'll never be done, but I think that's also the whole point, to always be aware of it and keep pushing yourself.
It's the journey, right? And we will try to contribute our tiny part to that. So, and the question we always ask at this podcast, it's a big one, a philosophical one, maybe it's too early in the morning to answer that. But if you could change just one thing in the world, there are lots of problems, what would it be? Like something big you would pick?
Something big I would pick?
Yeah.
I mean... to be honest, I think I said initially I'm sort of half Jamaican, half German, and I'm very aware of how lucky, like what a lottery it is where you're born in this world, basically, and the opportunities you get. And I think making an impact on the equality of opportunity, that's just, I think that's huge. And it starts with very simple things like healthcare and then education. Because, I mean, the world is full of bright minds and kind souls. And, you know, some of them are born in conditions that are just easier, right?
To make potential.
Yeah, exactly. And to make that a little bit more equal, I think that would be cool if I know, someday I can look back and think, okay, I made a small dent there.
Yeah. I think it's a very noble mission. I mean, especially for the education.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your experience. And yeah, we look forward to hanging out at Marantix Campus for the next Women's Breakfast.
Very good,
and,
yes.
And yeah, ethical discussions and other great events and initiatives you are doing. We'll be following you on socials and in real life.
Thank you for the invitation, Katya.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.